Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11. Chapter 2, entitled Maharaj Nimi Meets the Nine Yogendras. Text number 10. Please repeat after me. Shri Shukha Uvacha Rajan Evam Krita Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Pritastam Ahab Devarshi Hare Samsmarita Gune. Shri Shukha Uvacha Rajan Evam Krita Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Pritastam Aha Devarshi Hare Samsmarita Gune. Shri Shukha Uvacha Rajan Evam Krita Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Pritastam Aha Devarshi Hare Samsmarito Gune. Rajan Evam Krita Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Rajan Evam Kritam Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Shri Shukha Uvacha Rajan Evam Kritam Prashno Pritastam aha devarshi Matajis Shri Shukha Uvacha Rajan Evam Krita Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Pritastam aha devarshi Hare Samsmarito Gune. Shri Shukha Uvacha Rajanevam Krita Prashno Vasudevena Dhimata Vasudevena Dhimata Hare Samsmarito Gune. Shri Shukha Uvacha Shri Shukadev Goswami Shri Shukadev Goswami said, Rajan, O King, Evam, thus, Krita Prashna, questioned, Vasudevena. By Vasudev. Dhimata. The intelligent. Prita. Pleased. Tam. To him. Aha. Spoke. Deva Rishi. The sage among the demigods. Hare. Of Lord Hari. Samsmarita. Made to remember. Gune. By the qualities. Translation. Shukdev Goswami said, O King, Devarshi Narad was pleased by the questions of the highly intelligent Vasudev because they suggested the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They reminded Narad of Lord Krishna. Thus, Narad replied to Vasudev as follows. There's no purport, so we'll read text 11. I'll just read the translation by the humble disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and the purport also. Translation. Shri Narada said, O best of the sattvatas, you have quite correctly asked about the eternal duty of the living entity toward the Supreme Lord. Such devotional service to the Lord is so potent that its performance can purify the entire universe. Purport. A similar statement was made by Shri Shukadev Goswami in the first verse of the second canto when he congratulated Parikshit Maharaj for asking about Krishna. Varyan eshate prashna krito loka hitam rupa nipa atmavit sammata pamsam shrota yasya ya praha. My dear king, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial to all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists. Similarly, Sri Suta Goswami congratulated the inquiring sages of Naimisharanya in the following words, Munaya sadhu prashtoham bhavadhir loka mangalam yat krishna yat kritaha krishna samprashno yanatma suprasidati. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Bhagavatam 1.2.5. Narada will now answer Vasudev's inquiry about the process of devotional service. Later, at the end of their conversation, he will reply to Vasudev's comments about Vasudev's own faulty intentions. Om Ajnantamirandasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadhati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri guru vaishnavamsa shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana ragunatanvitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamsa He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptana Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sutai Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuba Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Ananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namne Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Prachayana Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchata Deshapadina. So this text today talks about the crux of our human existence really. It touches upon the aspect of devotional service. So if we examine what service is, we are taught that this is one of the fundamental questions that we are first explained when we are told about the body and the soul. The existence of the soul is the reality, the body is temporary. At that time we are also one of the most important points that are explained about the soul is that the swadharma of the soul, the natural constitutional position of the soul is seva. And this is quite when I heard this for the first time, it was a completely new dimension. I had never understood this. And then when Prabhupada gives the wonderful examples of to explain what constitutional position is and what swadharma means by the analogies of, and he says just like water's water and liquidity, that the swadharma of water is liquidity. Similarly, the swadharma of fire is heat. So that means you cannot differentiate between the two. It is, water means liquidity by definition. Fire means heat by definition. So similarly, the soul by definition really is meant for service. Either we serve Krishna and or the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representatives, and or we will serve our senses. So there isn't even an agnostic may say, I don't serve anyone, but why should I be a servant? I'm not a servant, I'm the master. But then at the end of the life, the master has to be subjugated by the time factor. And in the millennium of time, just 50, 60, 80 years is nothing. So it is a foolish understanding. So therefore the service, first aspect of service is that we are, it is our natural, the soul wants to serve, and it is something which is the most natural thing to for a living entity. And the second thing is that what do we mean by service? Because service could be anything. You can say that, okay, the hotel is serving its customers, and the airline is serving its passengers, the railway is serving also its passengers, or the prime minister is serving the, or the president is serving the praja, or at least they're supposed to. So seva then gets bandied about. The word seva means so many people say I'm serving, but the definition is that first of all, by selflessly doing some things which are entirely pleasing to others. And devotional service would mean service in devotion to the Lord, which means then that would be the highest, because when it is dovetailed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or in the parampara and his representatives and his paraphernalia. So even without the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at least if the attempt is to serve selflessly, it is a good service. Many times the question is asked that we see people who are serving, they may be following a particular, they may not believe in God, but still they actually want to serve. So there is always some, it is not that it is negative, but the value would be minimal if we don't do it, because ultimately then if you are serving for our own, we may say I'm not taking any money for it. But if we do not bring the factor of that in a surrender to the Lord, then in one way or the other, it may be for subtle distinction, for prestige, could be various reasons. So therefore, there is value, but the real value comes when we dovetail the service to devotion service. And that is what this verse is about, that where devotion service is considered the highest. I had never heard the word devotional service till coming to ISKCON. I guess most of you also may have also seen that. And the other attribute to devotional service is that the attitude is most important. It is the consciousness with which we do, not the type of service. Somebody may say that I'm doing a big service in terms of visibility, in terms of impact. And somebody may be doing something which is not barely seen also. Example is given of the within a person who is a devotee, and she is raising a child in Krishna consciousness, trying her best to do it within the principles of Krishna consciousness, is hardly seen. It is like one of the things is taken for granted, because this is practically every household has mothers, obviously. So therefore, it is just assumed that that is something which is a kind of a mundane seva, but actually it is not. So it can be, if we are doing it for our own benefit, or our, where we would say that I have a certain view and that must be it. I have become an engineer, so the child must be an engineer, and that's the goal of life only. There's nothing wrong with being an engineer, but if what is the consciousness, and if you say that's the final goal, or that's the intermediate goals. An occupation is an intermediate goal. The final thing is the meaning of life. So therefore, even a service like a parent to a child can become devotional service. So anything, even if you are working, what is the purpose of our working? We naturally, there is a immediate need that we have to take care of our family. We have to provide for them, provide emergencies, provide for savings for the future. And that's given in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, what is the ideal way of doing it. So there is nothing wrong in it. But we can also dovetail that by using our whatever we gain out of it. If we are blessed with a certain position or a certain financial capacity, some people may be earning more than others, and if they are able to simplify their lives and contribute to help further this Krishna consciousness, or if not by finance, by time, that's an equally critically important, or the consciousness. The least of all is anyone can, because consciousness would mean that if we are constantly thinking about it, then there are a variety of ways when we can use our activities and time to do this, where it doesn't necessarily mean a financial issue. So basically, this is another aspect of devotional service, where it is not related to the type of service, but the consciousness in which we do that. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually, when he spoke to Sanatana Goswami and gave him the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, so he mentioned three eternal principles. Basic, this was the, he said that eternal means it is time immemorial, and the most fundamental foundation, and the three are, one is Ishwar, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is bhakti, which is the process of devotion, and one is bhakta, the devotee. This is the axiomatic truth, that the purpose is that the Supreme Personality of God is always there, and the living entity is meant to be a devotee. And devotee doesn't mean someone who dresses in a certain way, someone comes to the temple every day, someone puts a tilak every thing. These are the attributes externally, and which can be helpful, because it can identify someone, and also it brings a certain our thought process and consciousness also can move into it. But again, the most important is our consciousness, which is internal, and our activities. So devotees, in fact, when Madhvacharya was asked, what is the definition of a pure devotee? Who is a pure devotee? So he said he will be, a pure devotee is known by the sound vibration of his mouth
and the steadfastness of his devotional service. The sound vibration of his mouth and the steadfastness of his devotional service is the, we can say, this is how we understand a pure devotee. Now, there may be categories. Pure devotee is very, very high. But nevertheless, if you are struggling to follow in the footsteps of pure devotees or follow their guidance, then at least we may not be so fully steadfast, but we strive to be steadfast. We may not be constantly, our mouth would not be constantly vibrating with the transcendental knowledge or Hari Kirtan, but at least we can attempt and support others who do it. So there are degrees. But this is the where we would be. The importance of a devotee becomes very important, that a devotee is... how would we know somebody is a devotee? It's not just by the knowledge, but it is actually by activities. Right? Like me, how a person behaves. And there are umpteen number of, instructions, which are told about how Vaishnava behavior should be. And even our acharyas also, Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sanatana Goswami and Hari Bhakti Vilas, and more recently in our time, Srila Prabhupada, practically throughout his writings, the exemplary behavior of Vaishnavas, what that means, and of course he lived that, but that writings also teach that, especially in Nectar of Instruction and Nectar of Devotion, carries this message about the behavior. And not only the acharyas, but even the academic scholars have been stressing on this constantly. Just after Srila Prabhupada had passed away, just shortly after that, a book had come out, the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and in which Dr. Larry Shin, who was one of the early supporters of Prabhupada, one of the few supporters in the West, and he was... professor in Oberlin College. So he was interviewed by Stephen Gelberg for this book. And he was asked this question that, Dr. Shin, in your opinion, what are the chances of ISKCON surviving as a religious institution in the long run? What do you think are the chances that ISKCON will survive as a religious institution in the long run? And his answer was very important. He said, "It will precisely depend upon the spiritual practices that the followers of Srila Prabhupada will continue, and to the extent that they continue to follow the in spiritual practices of Srila Prabhupada, and to the extent that they make spiritual advancement based on those spiritual practices. So precisely to that extent, this institution will survive. And as we see that by and large, with all the pulls and pressures of this institution that has gone through, but basically it has survived, prospered and grown in spite of all the challenges and difficulties, in spite of many... events that have happened also, that the leadership fundamentally believes in this, that it is actually following faithfully the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and also the practices and the advancement made by those practicing those spiritual practices. So even Srivatsa Goswami of Radharaman Temple, he also said that the sincerity, the integrity and the faithfulness of the followers of Srila Prabhupada is the only proof and sufficient proof of the authenticity of ISKCON. The sincerity, integrity and faithfulness of the followers of Srila Prabhupada is the only proof and the sufficient proof of the authenticity of ISKCON. That means any institution will survive. So the stress on exemplary Vaishnava behavior is critical. In whatever, nobody is exempted. You can't say that because I am, in a particular situation of life, I've got particular challenges in my life, I've got some special events that are happening in my life. I've got special responsibilities in my life. So I'm exempt. Nobody's exempt. A human being has standard. There are certain behavioral norms. And that actually forms civilization. So when we talk of Satya Yoga, it is primarily the difference was that the elevation of consciousness was very high, but then they also implemented it in their behavior. So the exemplary behavior, and now in the Kali Yuga, as it progresses, that will become a bigger challenge. But then it's a question of where we look for. If we have a desire, we will look for those examples, and then we will follow that. And fortunately, for all of us here, you know, Srila Prabhupada's example, and also his mercy of bringing us here to his lotus feet, to the lotus feet of Lord, is very fortunate, because it's causeless. Also, Krishna tells Arjuna also that in Bhagavad Gita that those who are my devotees are not really my devotees as much as those who are the followers of my devotees. So everywhere they're stressing the need to not only have accept the spiritual master, but also to have a particular behavior, but to go to a role model also. So, looking to the behavior, the automatic need would be to have role models to find a spiritual master. And this also has been stressed in the by Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that there are four prerequisites. That means they are the basic first needs for progressing in, for a sincere devotee to progress in spiritual life. So number one is to accept the authority of a spiritual master. Second is to become initiated by spiritual master and learn the practice of devotional service. Third is to obey the orders of the spiritual master. And four is to try and follow the acharyas under the guidance. So these are the prerequisites for going forward. And again, this comes from consciousness and spirit. Again, it's not a technicality that you may say, if I have to, I will accept someone who, just because someone is giving initiation somewhere, so I mean I will just accept it, so I have ticked one box, then I tick the second box. No, it's not like that. It is really, our desire is sincere. We also need to use our intelligence to know that whether what we are getting into, and thirdly our own ability or determination to follow the path, because it isn't really like we don't want just a trophy guru. Prabhupada would use the word trophy guru. Trophy is, you know, when you win some trophy, you make an effort, you get a trophy, and then you put it in the shelf. Then you don't have to bother. No? And that's only for people to come and see that, wow, you won this 50 years ago or 30 years ago when you were young. So guru, if you want that kind of guru, that you take initiation, then you just put him on a shelf, so that when people come, you know, okay, you also have a guru. It's a status, you know, that you, having a guru means maybe it's a social status. So it's not like that. It has to be someone, and even if someone is not initiated formally, but if someone is really desiring, then Krishna and guru will take care of seeing that our spiritual advancement will follow, because he will only arrange it. We don't have to seek. Krishna will fulfill our desires. So pleasing the spiritual master is given in the Vedas, and also especially in the Vaishnava Sampradayas. That's a very important, requirement for spiritual advancement. And it is, you can see practically in every book, Srila Prabhupada has stressed this. Even in his lectures, in his talks, in his discussions with his devotees, once in 1975, there was a big debate going on, because that was the time, that was the peak of the Radha Damodar Party. The Radha Damodar Party was mostly of brahmacharis and some sannyasis who had formed Radha Damodar deities were with them, they had many, many buses, and they used to go out for book distribution, Sankirtan. And they really, every year there was a record, especially during the December marathon. So there was a furor, and there was a great the whole ISKCON world, whatever, there were almost 100 temples by then. Everywhere the effect of Sankirtan, that is the distributing books, hitting the road, was very high. And then mostly the Grihasthas were managing the temple, and then they were looking after the deities. So there was a big debate going on as to what is more important, deity worship or book distribution. And then Prabhupada came to know, then he said it is it's very childish, because it isn't one or the other. That is the, as we saw, that he said it's the attitude and the consciousness which whatever service you do, that's more important than the external part. So it isn't that we have, somebody sells 1,000 books is more important than someone who sells one book. If the person has made as much effort, then that is also equally devotional service. Or someone who is a back-end helper in the temple is as important as someone who is actually dressing Radha Gopinath. So it is not the external seva, but it is the desire may be there, but just obediently and trying to serve in the best possible way is very important. And Krishna consciousness is a science. So we can have quantifiable results. So even if anyone has any questions about how do we know whether we are pleasing our spiritual master? So there is evidence. It is given that there are three types of evidence. Number one is that if you are doing the activities that our spiritual master has himself done those activities, or has liked those activities, or has instructed, then we know that that is one, that it will be pleasing him. Second is that devotees will be pleased with us when we are following this, when we are serving the spiritual master. Now these two are indicative, means they are giving us a guideline about whether we are on the right path and whether we are pleasing the spiritual master. Both devotees pleasing and doing activities where the spiritual master has himself prescribed. The third one is actually probably the most the clinching evidence, and that is that the happiness we get, the satisfaction we get by performing this, yayatma suprasidati, the satisfaction to the soul will be the biggest evidence of the contentment and the happiness just in doing the seva in an act of offering to the spiritual master. So we know that it is that it will be pleasing, and we can always check with devotees when we are in doubt. So the way we can please our spiritual master, one is that we should also make it that it is throughout our lives. It is not like that devotional service is only for a short time, or it is we have sharp bursts of devotion in between bouts of maya. Shouldn't be like that. Just like how a 100-meter sprinter, he will sprint for only 10 seconds or 11 seconds. The record for the sprint is 9.5 or 9.6 seconds. But he has to rest, he has to practice, he has to also take... So it's finished in 10 seconds, but then he rests for a whole day. So we are not like that. It's not that we have a sudden burst and a sudden enthusiasm, and then we are back into our own world for a long time. Then again we wake up, if something happens, either a crisis happens or we get some inspiration, and then again we go down. No, it's not erratic. It has to be throughout. And also we need to know that it is something which is done in conjunction with others. As much as our own spiritual practices are personal, but along with it we cannot be individual alone, because we need association. That association is meant for inspiration, not just for us, but others also get. It is, you can't identify and say that 10 people are there, you think he's the inspirer and 9 are inspired. Actually all 10 are getting inspiration. So it's like that. At different times, it is most of these things are unspoken. you know, even if you're doing a joint service, it's just the fact that you are doing it for the pleasure of others. Like in yatras, for instance, many groups come together. They don't have to speak at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning. So these 40 Belgaum Matajis are making chapatis for 5,000 people. Now when they get, they don't have to speak, but it's just the fact that they get fired up just by being in each other's company. Or our cooks who get up, the devotees, they get up at 1 in the morning, finish their rounds, and then they're cooking for 5,000 people. They just get that deep happiness, and they don't need to kind of let everyone know this, why they're doing it. So while we are considering this devotional service, and but it is not like a romantic notion. It's not like something we, you know, very smoothly going, fine, nice concept. Everything is, you know, going to be the way I want, when I want, how I want, and it's like a fairy tale. Unfortunately, it is not. I won't say unfortunately. I mean, you can say fortunately, because Krishna brings up these inconceivable situations. And these inconceivable situations are virtually, I mean, in every single person's life, and they're always very different, and frequencies are completely unknown. You may have some bouts of relative stability, then something comes up, and then for a short period, long period, really being going through very difficult times. So one may say that, well, I'm chanting 16 rounds, I'm following 4 regulative principles, so then Krishna should be giving me what I want. You know, I want a good house, I want a faithful family, I want obedient children, I want a successful business, I want a comfortable home, I want if you have all your requirements, you can state it. Variety of things. So we have all kinds of desires, but Krishna doesn't give us that all the time, and often he may make it even worse. Why? Because he actually loves us. Because Krishna doesn't want a mixed devotee. Mixed devotee is a karma misha bhakta, someone who is only there he is like a temporary connection. You know, you charge your mobile when you need it, then you take it out. You don't need to keep it all the time charged. So here you need something from Krishna, you connect with him, and then switch off the connection. It's not like that. He wants that we are always with him. So he will choose the situation that is best for us. If he feels that the situation is something which is where is very favorable, externally, materially also, then we are of course thankful to him. It's easy to be thankful to him. But when the situation is when it gives the opposite, to shatter our complacency, we should not then start criticizing, blaming, but we accept it in the same and thank him, because that is his mercy. That faith we have to have, that Krishna is doing that what he does is best for us. It's not just best for the world, but best for us. He's like a tailor who's, you know, cutting the cloth and taking the measurements and fitting individually for every person. So the situation which he thinks is best for us, if it is that we have to, you know, go through a very rough patch, that is his desire. So it may be manifesting in someone or something or in a situation or in the government or whatever the situation is, and we are kind of struggling. Or it is it may be that things are going very well, but we shouldn't take our eye off the ball, that it is Krishna who is providing it, and what is Krishna wanting us to do? If he is giving us, then we are grateful to him, and then we say that, well, I need to make the most of it, and how do I reciprocate with him, because I have to show my gratitude. So either way, we should thank Krishna, and this understanding of how to thank Krishna in various inconceivable situations is really Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness, in one sense, doesn't mean that we chant 16 rounds and follow the group. That is the prerequisite or the foundation. But the fuller understanding is that when we are in a position to act in a certain behavior, and we take spiritual guidance, we cannot do it on our own. Oftentimes we make mistakes, we hurt other people also. But fundamentally, if our awareness improves in this way, then how to react to these situations. Now, a misconception also is that, well, that means I should be, that we should be very complacent. Sometimes you may feel that, well, I don't have much to do because, well, I am a fatalist, you know. No, actually Krishna wants us to fight and struggle. See, in Arjun's case also, why the Bhagavad Gita was spoken on the battlefield and that too at the, just prior to the war starting, and that too when Arjun was giving very plausible reasons why he should not fight. It made a lot of sense, you know, from one point of view that, you know, why should I fight and kill so many people and I am willing to sacrifice, you know. You know, said wonderful, I mean, it's such a great, he's giving it up. But in the larger sense, you know, Krishna actually calls him a fool and tells him, he tells him to fight. So see, the whole tables are turned, the roles are reversed in a sense, from the way we would understand it, if we don't understand from the point of view of Shastra. Why Krishna is saying, it's not that he had a particular hatred towards Duryodhana or so on, because they are all his parts and parcels. But for dharma, for Arjun's sake, it is his devotional service that he has to, he's been the best archer in the world and he has to live up to his occupational duty and take the responsibility to lead his team, to set right. It is not the individual, but it is the principle that he had to follow. So we learn from that the same thing, that if the difficult situation means we have to fight. We have to do the best. If any impediments are there in our service, we need to see how we can remove them as much as possible. But under spiritual guidance, we come to know whether we accept his mercy, when to accept his mercy, chant Hare Krishna and tolerate, or when to accept his mercy, chant Hare Krishna and fight. So accepting the defeat and accepting the fight, that is sometimes, for instance, our health, somebody has got a terminal disease. He takes his treatment, but finally he says there is no there is no cure. Then he will, instead of fighting, he will tolerate it and then he will take the right decision. Ideal decision would be to see how he can best spend the remaining time. There are people who do that. And then there are some who will, you know, for the last minute want to try and see if they can prolong for some moments, you know, in spite of being just almost like a vegetable. So basically, accepting the defeat or accepting the fight, that means either way we have to accept Krishna's, it is Krishna's mercy, and we will continue our connection to chanting Hare Krishna. But whether to tolerate or to fight, you know, oftentimes we need guidance on that. But so it's not that it is we have to just let go. Sometimes the situation will be completely beyond us, but many times the situation may seem like that, but either way the effort has to be 100%. In fact, if anything, the effort has to be should be even more, because we are not tied down by fear, or we should not be tied down by fear and anxiety, because we do, if we have faith that whatever happens is Krishna's mercy, then we have to really fearlessly move towards achieving our goal, but not be attached to the result, because the result may not be favorable at the end. Well, that's fine, but at least we have to give it 100% effort. There are some nice examples giving us this principle of whether good or bad, it is Krishna's mercy. One story is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. There was a devotee called Kamalakanta Biswas. He was actually the personal assistant of Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya, so one day when this Kamalakanta Biswas came to Jagannath Puri, so he wrote a letter to the king, Pratapruddha, saying that, establishing the fact that Advaita Acharya is actually is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the same letter he wrote that he also owes 300 rupees, he owes a debt of 300 rupees, so please give us a loan so that we can clear it. And he didn't tell anyone about this letter, he just wrote the letter and sent it to the messenger to give it to the king. But by the mysterious ways of the Lord, that letter came in the hands of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he read the letter, so he then told his personal assistant Govind that he just smiled. He didn't react. He was very, he was not happy, but he just kept the the shine on his face was still the same. And he said that it is true that Advaita Acharya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he is Mahavishnu. So that is very nice. But then this is a major contradiction. How can it be that the Supreme Lord is in debt? How does he have three, four, and he is begging the king who is in a material position to waive off or give a loan and to pay off 300 rupees? So he was very unhappy. So he told him that, told Govind, that I do not want to see Kamalkant Viswas ever again. Don't bring him in my presence. So that completely, when the news went to Kamalkant Viswas, he was extremely unhappy, he was totally shattered. Advaita Acharya heard, he was very happy, and he actually told Kamalkant Viswas that you are very fortunate. This is the Lord's mercy on you. In my case, I had, because Advaita Acharya also, he said, the Supreme Lord was constant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always considering when he was young, because Advaita Acharya is actually the disciple of Madhvendrapuri. So, in fact, Advaita Acharya was the godbrother of the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Ishwarpuri. So, that way he is in a higher position. So he would, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was young, he was always giving deference and respect to Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya didn't want that, he because he knew this was the Lord, even though he was much older. He was almost 50 when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born. So he wanted to actually, he was always trying to argue and tell, give deference, but he give respect to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would always win that. So then Advaita Acharya, just to get the mercy of the Lord and to get in a, just to establish that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should chastise him, that will be the proof that he is in a superior position. So Advaita Acharya deliberately started advocating different philosophy, Yoga Vashishta philosophy, which propagated impersonalism and all complete some concocted. So he kept on and on stressing that in his lectures, knowing that it will sooner or later Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will hear it. And the Lord did hear it, and he got very upset and he challenged him, and then eventually he even beat him physically in transcendental situation between them. And Advaita Acharya was ecstatic when he said, that was what I wanted. So he's telling Kamalkant Viswas that even then he never gave me that kind of mercy, that he's totally banished me. That would have been for me the ideal, but it's not happened. He only just gave me a couple of socks and that's it. So then he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and explained that Kamalkant Viswas is actually didn't mean. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was then restored that. But the point is that Advaita Acharya was stressing to Kamalkant Viswas that actually just accept it as the mercy. Just like Mukunda Dutt, another follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was he had some association which was not appropriate with worldly people. Again, this is the Leela of the Lord. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I will never see your face for 10 million births. So Mukunda started jumping up and down. 10 million births, I'll see you after 10 million births. Instead of feeling that, my God, 10 million births, so he actually took it in a positive way, that at least I'll see you after 10 million births. So this was explained to Kamalkant Viswas, and this is the example to us that whatever way the mercy comes, we have to accept it. Of course, the Lord is coming in various forms to us. He comes in his through his representatives. He's also coming through his holy name. He's coming through the deity form. So there are a variety of ways, and if we were to give deference to all these, and also follow the instructions, because scriptures are also the word of the Lord. So if we take that and follow, then actually Krishna will reveal himself to the extent that we are sincerely following it. So the example again here is that His mercy is available to everyone. Somebody may say that, people often say that he is very partial, that he is only merciful to some. No, that is not the case. His mercy is 100% for everyone. And the example is of the sun. That the sun is shining, the zillions of sun rays are there for everyone to accept. But it is so bright that even stones over centuries and millenniums, actually some of the stones become valuable just because they have been under the sun for such a long time. But on the other hand, a person who is born blind doesn't get the sun rays. Even though the sun rays are there, but doesn't see the sun. He's not able to see. So that is not the situation because the sun is partial. It's just that the receptacle, the capacity of the receptacles differ. One can see, one cannot see. So similarly, in the case of Krishna's mercy also, it is for everyone. Now, somebody who is completely against the principles of the Lord, then he doesn't get his mercy. Somebody who is asking for favors from the Lord, he gets partial mercy. And somebody who is totally surrendered to the Lord, he gets 100% mercy. So the mercy is equally distributed. But who takes it, who accepts it, is depending on our own reactions or our own actions. So it is not the Lord who is partial. It is actually the reaction of the recipient, whether he is 100% or partial or not at all. So this devotional service is again a gradual process, and it's very nicely explained by Bhaktivinod Thakur as a purport to this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We hear this the nine gradual to develop love of God. It doesn't come overnight. So this Adav Saddha Tata Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya. So this is explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Adav Shraddha means first, he says, a person comes in touch with like the Lord's mercy. Like we all have somehow come in touch with in some way or the other. So we have a little faith. Adav Shraddha means that is the initially is the little faith. Tata Sadhu Sang. Sadhu Sang would be the next step. Then he starts associating. He has a desire to take his Krishna consciousness or his spiritual awakening a little bit more seriously. So that faith takes him to the next step, which is associating with devotees. When he actually associates regularly, sadhu sangh, then it goes into tatha bhajana kriya. Bhajan kriya indicates the process where he slowly starts taking on hearing, chanting, a process of devotional service. So it is a process. So the beginning, and he intensifies. When that process of bhajan kriya goes on, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that then he goes to the anartha nivritti stage, which is perhaps the most important of the nine. Anartha nivritti indicates the cleansing or removing the unwanted desires. That is the toughest phase also, in one sense, because it is where we have to get rid of our first, the basic things would be the regulative principles that we follow, no illicit sex, no gambling, etc. But there are so many other subtle challenges also in front of us. So following that process, whatever time it takes, anartha nivritti is perhaps the longest period. But once you pass that, then comes nishtha, which is really that firm faith starts developing. Through the firm faith, he says then, and you keep acting in that with that firm faith, then the taste starts developing, ruchi. Taste for service, taste for Krishna consciousness, taste for chanting. And from that comes asakti. Asakti is detachment. So, attachment to Krishna actually. Detachment from the world, both are simultaneous. So, the more you're attached to Krishna. So, from intensifying the taste and acting on that, you start developing the taste for Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Then you come to stage of bhava. Bhava means the emotion of you can say the fruit of the first seeds of love for Krishna. And when you actually keep intensifying that, then you come to the higher stage of prema, which is really constant love of God. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur very nicely explains So for us, this process is, what we learn is that it's a gradual process. Secondly, it is, we have to examine it where we are. Like, most of us would be already, certainly we have got a little faith, we've come in various ways, whether to the temple, attending programs, hearing, taking some aspects of Krishna consciousness. Then we are moving to, we like to associate with devotees. And then we've also started the process, hearing and chanting, and now we are in the anartha nivritti stage, because there are many levels within that, and that cleansing of the material consciousness is a very challenging process. We could be going back and forth, you know, in that children's game, snakes and ladders. You can go almost up and then come down, so you never know when you can slide down. It isn't that. But if we consistently and constantly follow the process, then we would be moving towards that. But once you pass that, then the other steps, as the Shastras say, are actually much quicker, and because you've got rid of the unwanted things. And then it's a matter of the Lord just revealing the various steps to us. So we'll just stop at that. And is there any questions, any comments anyone has?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. The question is based on the mixed devotional service and pure devotional service for the beginners.
Sorry, where are you? I'm sorry. Yeah, okay.
Is for the question is based on the mixed devotional and pure devotional service for the beginner sadhakas. In the pure devotional service, if one straight away approaches the Lord without desiring anything, but at the same time he might end up asking so many things from some other living beings or demigods, which is prohibited in Chaitanya Charitamrita as pure devotional service means na pujibe devi deva. First of all, the foremost requirement. Now on the mixed devotional path, if someone comes to the Lord with some material desires, then the Lord fulfills purifies the person first of all, then he fulfills the desires, and finally he gives himself as a bonus, which is a big thing. So which one is the safer path for beginning sadhakas?
No, for us there is only one process. Basically, we try to reduce our inclination to ask. Because that is the, generally when we are in any pressure situation, our immediate motive is to try to reduce the pressure. So we may not speak it out, we may not verbalize it, but internally our desire may be that there may be a secret thought behind it, that I am doing this, but I am hoping that I am not going to say it, but but Krishna knows our thought before the thought comes to our mind also. So our effort has to be to keep on following the process and trying to reduce the desire. Till that time also, even if we have desires, we should just keep coming to Krishna. That is, so it's not that we have to, we are saying what is the most highest process, and it's difficult for anyone to judge because we are all struggling in that. But while we may still have desires, but at least we can see that over time, if our desires reduce, and our inclination to serve. So if we keep following the process and we see the telltale signs that we actually like to increase our different services. Services include our personal services of sadhana as well as services for others. So as we follow that process, we will see the telltale signs of whether our desires are for material things are coming down or not. If not, then we need to introspect and we need to ask, take help of others honestly. Because if we are bewildered, then we need to go to someone whom we trust to get guidance as to what we can do to, how else can I reduce. But for us, it's very clear. We have to keep following that process.
But for pure devotional service, not asking anything from the Lord, that means not asking anything from anyone else also.
Yes.
While
so that is also mixed. No? So if you are asking from devotee, from demigods or anyone, it is the same that we are asking desires. No? So whether we ask from the Lord or whether we ask from others, for our personal sense gratification or for our personal needs, it's the same thing.
But asking from the Lord is like asking from the Father, it's not begging.
Yeah, so it is a matter. See, if you're saying that, Lord, give me, He's already providing. So, if you're asking that, give me a better house, make my life comfortable, make my children obedient to me, make my business successful. So, one may say that we can keep asking, but it's not going to be helpful to our spiritual life. He may give, He may not give. And if He gives, and if we are still in that motive, we will think, wow, my desires have been fulfilled. But actually, it is worse because we will then think that that is the only way, because He gave me. But then it's like the laws of karma will anyway become tighter and tighter in the longer run. And if He doesn't give us, then it's an opportunity for us probably to somehow, we may, if we are really badly affected, that turn to others and see, take help, that I was expecting and I didn't get it. But we may still continue. So, see, that's the choice we have. But the only point is that if we continue to keep asking, we can justify and say, He's the Father, so He should give. But the fact is, we have come here because we've forgotten Him. And if He wants us to come back, He wants us to come back with love. And to demonstrate our love, we need to show our love for Him, not His material energy. You may say His energy is also His, everything is His, He's only given all this. So, what is the harm? The thing is that we can have any number of desires and we can still live on that, but then we'll be more in the karmic reactions more and more. See, He has two energies, no? So, we are in the inferior energy, that's also from the Krishna, but then He'll allow the laws of karma to work. But He intervenes in the path of, in the process, when some devotee turns to Him, tries to be sincerely following, He intervenes specifically, and He manipulates and conditions things in such a way that He does it what is best for that Lord, for that devotee. So it could be from an external point of view worsening the situation, or it could be improving the situation from the external point of view, from a material point of view. Either way, He's testing, and that is actually His progress, because He's testing only those people whom have turned towards Him. So, but then we have to then pass that test. And when we pass that test, then He will give us His full mercy. Otherwise, we'll get His partial mercy if you're asking for favors. So, as I explained earlier, you will get some favors. I mean, you get some mercy, but you'll get if you're asking for favors, you'll get partial mercy. If you get the full, you get His full mercy if we completely surrender to Him. Any other questions? This is one at the back there.
Hare Krishna. Hello. Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yeah.
Hello. This post given to like that temple president in charge, fully surrender brahmachari, ahankar, inke andar ahankar paida hota hai, sometimes they become angry and all, then what situation we have to handle? How to, in third canto, Lord Kapil Dev instruct Dev, his mother Devuti, that ahankari person directly go to narak. So this post for brahmachari is this in charge, they got ahankar. So, how to handle this?
But you don't need to handle, no? It's between Him and Krishna. So, it is true that ahankar
even
is an...
Counselor got egoist, and his wife also become more egoist than counselor. Then how to handle this situation, and consilee become under pressure?
So, as I'm saying, that we are answerable for our own actions. We are not answerable for others. And similarly, they are not answerable to us. They are answerable to Krishna. So, when we go to the exam hall, we are sitting on a chair and giving our own exams. We are going to be judged by that, not how much we have helped others or criticized others. Right? So, each one has to give his own exam. So, life is an exam that way. So, yes, ahankar is also definitely an impediment. But whether someone has an ahankar, on what extent, that is, if it is, then that is his, he has a challenge and it is an impediment for him. But we have to consider on ourselves. If much of our life is dependent on pointing out others' weaknesses, then that is an impediment for us. So basically, we need to look at our own selves. Everyone is here because we have several weaknesses. We should try to see where we find someone who is, more stable, more as a role model, and take the help from them, rather than seeing, because we practically all of us are here only because we have a variety of weaknesses and challenges. So that's not a big news. Big news would be somebody we find who doesn't have or has really moved, and you'll find lots of people like that. I've seen, in several years of being in touch, the devotees who have, young devotees have come here, and then they come as students, and they're very raw students coming and studying and so on, taking to the path, and then making enormous strides, not just because of technical knowledge, but because of their accepting that and really taking a humble position. So if you find those, look at those, then that will be inspiring. So if there are areas where people have challenges, then let them, they will find a way. And if they don't, then they will be affected. So we need not worry too much about that. Any other questions? So one here. You pass the mic.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, thank you very much for the class. My question is in connection with these questions, with the first question. Like you were mentioning that if we are chanting 16 rounds and following four regulative principles, then, and we should simultaneously see that we are not asking from Krishna. But if a grihastha is in a position like he wants to serve Vaishnavas and wants to expand the mission. So there are two cases. One is that, and he financially he is not so strong that as his desire is to serve the Vaishnavas and expand the mission. So should he depend on the mercy of the Lord, just pray that whatever is your wish, in whatever way you want me to serve you, or should he pray that he should ask for more financial assistance from the Lord to serve the mission of the Prabhupada? What way he should?
So I explained also that we should not let this understanding of Krishna's mercy, which is true, which is, comes in various ways, but it should not also make us complacent. So we have to stand up and fight and struggle. So fight and struggle means not just praying. Fight and struggle means that we actually act on that way. So if we are in a position where we feel that we can improve our occupational situation, we should definitely do that. But we recognize that what actually happens, while putting 100% effort, what actually happens is not in our control. You know, it may happen, may not happen. And that's where we the challenge is, to accept the mercy. So it's not like we accept it without doing anything. We do our best. So if we are in a position where we feel that by improving our financial situation we are able to help, among others, we can help our family, help society, and help devotees, or help further the movement, certainly we should do that. I mean, that's our occupational duty. But the consciousness, as I was saying, that is that we also know that whatever happens is, so sometimes things really work out very well. The tendency may be to feel that I am the controller, means I have done it. And that may make us feel that I don't need anyone, I know the tricks how to do it. And on the other hand, if you're completely knocked down, we would then feel that, well, I just want to give up. It's not like that. We have to do the best we can. Because the situations for any living entity is never certain. Everything is uncertain in all aspects. So we should put our effort. So rather than saying that, should I pray for that? No, we just actually, we go one step further, we actually act on that basis. But following the principle, that means then we are acting, like for instance, if we have to put in extra effort, we put in, but it should not be at the expense of our minimum spiritual practices. For instance, if you were coming, you know, had many services in the temple, and now this may mean that I have to give up some services, because I have to find some time, I have to travel more, etc., then do it. That's fine, because ultimately your desire is to help. It's a very good desire. But it shouldn't be at the expense of minimum. Like at least if you're chanting, then that has to be the minimum. So that's, and now by technology, there are so many ways we can be in touch. Even if you don't physically come here, we can hear the classes through internet. We have lectures on, you know, tape, YouTube, movies are there. So many things are there. So we'll find the ways to keep in connection if we want to. So ultimately it goes down to our desire. Okay. So we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna, few announcements. There's a 3-day seminar on Amangalta se Mangalta ki or. The speaker is his guest, Vrijvasi Prabhu. Dates are from 28th April.